I did see very quickly before we go into the Shulchan Aruch, I did see that in this week's Pasha, it says in the Pasuk, So the Mefarshim speaks about this. What did he speak about working in 6 days? Just tell me about Shabbos. You know, what's the idea of the working 6 days? Yeah, but he said the pasuk is Shesh Yom Ta'asim Melacha. And if you're talking about Shabbos, then just tell me on Shabbos you're not doing melachos. Well, it's a mitzvah to work 6 days, so. So the answer given, Rabbi Shmuel also speaks about it, if I remember correctly, but the Mefarshim say that, no, it just gives us an indication that if somebody keeps Shabbos, that shows that even the 6 days of the week, he does it with the right approach and the right attitude, that he understands that HaKadosh Baruch Hu really is the one who sends Parnasa, and it doesn't come from random. Somebody works 6 days and he keeps Shabbos, he understands that Shabbos and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a Mekoyra Parnasa. And therefore, that reveals retrospectively that the 6 days of the melacha is only something which he does in connection with the Ribbono Shel Olam because HaKadosh Baruch Hu demands him to do so. However, somebody works 7 days a week, and he's got the attitude that everything comes from Koichi V'Otzim Yod. It's something his own doing. So in line with that, there's a story that also Chavetz Chaim apparently went up to somebody who had a factory which was working on Shabbos. The factory was operating on Shabbos. Chavetz Chaim told him, you know, you gotta stop. You can't have the factory open on Shabbos. Initially, he tried to say that he doesn't work himself. It's a factory, that kind of thing. But then Chavetz Chaim told him, it's Chilul Shabbos. You can't. And he replied and he said, this is 4,000 rubles every day my factory is on. It's 4,000. You know what fortune this is? 4,000. If I were to shut it, I'd lose so much money. Chavetz Chaim said, the Pasuk says that if you keep Shabbos, you're going to, you know, Parnassah will come. If you don't keep Shabbos, it's just not. Shesh Yom Ta'asim Melachon. Then, there's that connection between working and Shabbos. If you don't stick to it, then he said, nah, you think one Pasuk can ruin my Parnassah? You think one Pasuk can, that's that already. So the kids, it didn't take a long time until the communists took over, and they confiscated all his possessions as they did, you know, in those years, and everything was taken by the state, and he ended up being empty-handed, poor fellow indeed. So. And then he came back to Chavetz Chaim and he said, yeah, I should have known that, you know, that of course Parnassah comes from that. In hindsight. Anyway, okay, Rabbeisai, a little bit more about Hilchas at Tefillin. Yesterday we discussed some really important points within Mukif Gvil, within the Kotz Shalyud, the Togim. Now we're going to be looking at Seifav, which teaches that Tzorich Sheikhto B'Yamin, a person should write with his right hand. Right hand. Once you write, yes, similar with Beis. If Eitzoch Shichto be a minor person, should write with his right hand. A sofer who is writing pashas should be writing with his right hand. A filu sholit b'shtei yodim, even if he is really able of writing with both hands, nevertheless, he should be writing even if he's able to write with both hands, he should write with his right hand. Vim kasa b'smol. What happens if he writes with his left hand? He wants to be all shticky and he wants to write with it. This is right hand a person who is attempting to write with his left hand, then the psulim, the tefillin will be possible. As long as there's possibility of having the right hand. Somebody who's left-handed, smol diday have a yamin. So obviously, somebody who's left-handed and writes with his left hand, that's perfectly fine, sure. But we're talking about somebody who's right-handed and attempts to write with his left hand. That would be a psul. Now, the Mishnah discusses some very peculiar cases, such as somebody who is... So the first case, not so peculiar. I'm three lines into the Sifkotten Yudches. Somebody who writes with his right hand, but everything else is with his left hand. Oh, you're the other one. Oyle hepech, the vice versa. That's you? Yeah. Kosa prima godim, shenochan lechatchile shelikabel l'sofer. Sorry to break the news. Can't be a sofer. Because it gets questionable. You can't get it right. So again, somebody who is writing with his right and does everything else with his left. Or vice versa, that he writes with his left and does everything with his right. That's... Okay. So somebody who's got one of those ambiguous in-between... kind of not pure lefties. Sorry for the expression. Sorry, sir. But you know what I mean. So if somebody's a pure lefty, that's fine. Just go for it. Left-handed, and that's okay. But if it's good, there's anything that you do with your right hand, and something you do with your right, something with the left, that the Mishnah Berurah says, don't be a sofer. Don't be a sofer. No, everything. But the evidence, less so. But the evidence, if it's written, it's okay. If you what? If he?
That's right handed and bowls left-handed.
Okay. I'm Swiss. Sorry. Because it's not. Will he do anything with his left? What is natural right? What is natural strong hand?
So the question is,
because you could say that perhaps his natural strong hand is the other hand, and therefore you invalidate his right.
Any ambidextricity is a problem then.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Unless the Shulchan Aruch says, if he's pure, he's completely. No, but the Shulchan Aruch does say, im sholi bishtei yodov, then it's. If you're mamash completely, equally able to write with your right and left, and you're writing with your right, that's okay. If it's mamash identical, equal level. But it's very often, I mean, in my limited experience, I've seen that many people who are left handed, they've got there's something still putting into the right.
My hesitation that if it's 50-50, it's okay, but if it's lopsided, it's not.
Because we don't know which one is his right. We don't know which one is his right hand. These elements. If it's sholi b'shtei yodov, then and it's equally balanced, then you're surely considered a right-handed person. You can write with your right hand, but if there's something that you do with your left consistently, whether it's writing or shamalach,
you can't write with your left.
No, you cannot.
So it's 50-50. You can go with the right.
Yes.
But you can't.
But as if it's sholi b'shtei yodov, but if you do something purely with your left, then it's messed up. Oh. If a person only writes with his left, or only does melacha with his left, then he's messed up. Then Shulchan Aruch says, don't do yourself. Choose another panel, sir. Become a...
If he wants to write with his left, he has to be a pure left with everything.
Pure left, he can do it with left, and that's fine.
It's interesting, it says, you shouldn't be makabel in the sofer. It should say you shouldn't be a sofer.
So what are you medayik from that? What would you like to say?
He says
he shouldn't be makabel, he shouldn't use him as a sofer. Sure, I hear what you're saying. It's a nice deal.
He shouldn't be a sofer. A person shouldn't be a sofer. Not you shouldn't accept him as a sofer. Then he shouldn't be a sofer.
Yeah, no, but what does it mean to be a sofer without having going to be accepting him? That means he can write for himself. The Nusach is actually referring to is something called a Kabbalah. When you become a sof, you need a Kabbalah from a senior rov, like the smicha. It's quite very similar to smicha. It's called a Kabbalah. And when you are a sofer, you want to be registered, and you want to be an accepted sofer. You've got to have a shtar Kabbalah, and that's probably what it's referring to. That you shouldn't be accepting somebody as a sofer. Shloli kabloi kasofer. Don't accepting him as a sofer. Don't register. Don't accept him as a sofer if it's got that issue. Now the Mishmur continues now. So that's one of those. Anybody who ever wants like a quiz or bizarre question or bizarre Mishmur says, Kosav Ramami Panam in second line in Sifkot New Test. The Ramami Panu says, Maisel Hoyo B'Mitzrayim. The story happened in Egypt. Shetofas Echod Akulmus B'Sfosov. An individual took a Kulmus, a quilt besfosov in his lip, the kosabo, and he was able to write. Mouth writing. And it looks like it was a good writing. It was perfectly legible and correct. And it was invalidated. What's wrong with it? What's wrong with writing with your mouth? The presumption is that it was legible, aleph, and beis, it was halachically correct. It must be.
It can't be better than
So the Shulchan Aruch, the Mishnah Berurah says, in the name of the Ramah Panah, the reason why it's no good, the end of Chsiva Befer, Lekul Alma. It's not the normal way of writing. And that itself invalidates it. The fact that it's not the normal way of writing. I just pictured, by the dinners and the fundraising things, this fellow comes in front of everybody and writes, with his mouth. I just picture it. So, so that's good for fundraising, but it's not good for...
Someone with no
arms. Yeah, I hear,
Would he be allowed to?
No. It's not the chsiva b'kach, and it remains and the chsiva b'kach because that's the potlo daito. I know, but it's got to be universal. Because I'm going to Avram, the posel afilim yevshalim to acherim. It's going to be posel or whatever happens. I'm going to say for Mishnah Avram, b'shem aget mekusha v'oid poskim the mashmin zeim koyse b'ragloi la koyse b'yatzmol. What if somebody is able to do some writing with his ragloi, with his feet? He's sticking the quilt between his toes and he starts writing Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad.
Doesn't seem
like cover. Why not? What's wrong with the foot? So the man said, the Mishnah Berurah said, it's like writing with your left hand. It's like left hand. It's not the chsil b'kach. It would be a problem. It would be a puzzle. So despite the fact that it's neat and it's correct and it's nice, nevertheless it's puzzle. It's like a left handed. Yeah, so I suppose that's what he means over here. It's like your left hand is ender chsil b'kach, and that's why it's possible for somebody's right handed. Similarly, also that he's probably referring to that. Okay,
I'm thinking of the ominous that the Gemara brings in the Beis Hamikdash.
I see. Not sure because that's ender chsil b'kach.
In the Beis Hamikdash, he wrote four.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't know. I'm not sure. Why are you medak that it is the Echsiva?
Because we're... I'm just bringing
the comments. Yeah, very nice. Okay, I would argue it's probably not the Echsiva. So that's something that a sofer has to be very careful with to make sure to write according to the norm, the normal way of writing, and anybody's left-handed or not a pure lefty, it becomes questionable to go on a sofer. I recall having a conversation with somebody. This is a while ago. I don't remember exactly who it was. I don't remember. I remember I told somebody, and he told me that he had advanced writing skills, but he wasn't able to become a professional sofer because Takas, he had some things which he did with his other hand. So it is something which you could make sure that it is really either pure, he's right-handed, or if he's writing with his left hand, he has to be a purely left-handed. Sivo. En zoich lesatet kim shito elyoino. Sirtut, Rabbi Yisai. Sirtut is as follows. The Shulchan Aruch Zivov teaches us a word or two about Sirtut. We're only going to start the sugya. We're not going to look at it in its entirety today. But Sirtut is, contrary to in English we always write on top of the line. Right? We write on top of the line. That's a neat writing, and that's how we train the children from young age to write on top of the line. We also do it nowadays when we teach Kodesh handwriting. We do exactly the same. We teach them to write on top of the line for consistency and because it's logical. However, this is not accurately Torah writing. Safos is not written on top of a line. Safos is written under the line. And if you think about the Aleph base, it's natural and it's logical. Think about all our letters. Think about Aleph is not a good example. Base, there's the base, there's the top, and then after this is the bottom, the base. Okay, you've got a top and a bottom. You've got a top. Then you think about a yud, right? Think about a lamed. There's always that middle or top part of the letter, which is always the basis of the letter. Am I explaining myself? Think of Aleph. So think about a dalet. Dalet, there is always that top layer of the letter. Every letter has got a top layer. Not all of them have got a bottom. Every letter is written under a line and not on top of a line. The starting point in, and also the way you write it. If you write accurately out of base, you start from the top. You don't start from the bottom. It's everything is based from top up. That is real Safus. That is real Lashon HaKodesh. That is real Aleph base. If you think about block, Aleph, base, Gimel, Dalet, Hey, think about a hey, it's a good example as well. There's always that block in the middle, that block, it's not called a block, how should we call it? The main part, the body of the letter is always...
You've got other letters that are not like that, like an iron, for example,
or a test. No, so the iron is also a good example. The iron doesn't have really a bottom. The iron doesn't have anywhere to land on. It starts by the two things.
You mean the block or the script?
I'm talking about block. Safos. So, think about a shin. Okay, shin. The every letter you can see has got in the printed version also, you can see straight. There's a line on top of the letters. I'm leaving out the top of the lamed and top of the... If you go, you can see straight away. There's a line on top of the letters. That is the basis of all the Aleph Beis letters. They don't start from the bottom. They are hanging onto a top line. Absolutely. That's both the way you write, and more importantly, as far as we're concerned over here, that is the structure of the letter. The structure of the letter is that it's got something on top and it's hanging down. Now, the lamed is no. The lamed is a bit different. The lamed also has got really the main part, and there's a bottom part, and there's a top part. But yeah, you are the art, of course. Yes, there is such a thing as over the line. But pardon? Yeah. Now, the reason why I'm saying this is because in Torah there's something called sirtut. Sirtut is when you write a mezuzah or a tefillin or a sefer Torah for that matter, any stam, it's always written. There is a line which has to be written, which is the sirtut. And that line is a thin line, and the sofer writes starting from there down. There is no line that you write the letter on top, but there is that line that we described earlier. That line is actually an existing line, and that is called a sirtut. And if you open up any sefer Torah, you will see that line. You will see that line. It's normally done very thin, and that will be discussed shortly. But that's what sirtut is all about.
Maybe a funny question, but based on all what you've explained, how does the sofer make sure that he writes straight?
Very good, because there is, that's what we're going to be seeing now, that what they do is they actually take a very, very sharp, this is part of their equipment of a sofa. There's like a very, they engrave, they scratch a line, which is visible, and they don't have very thin, but it's very, very sharp. And that line is where they start the letters. That's, you'll see it. The first three words are Ein Tzorech Lasartet Kim Shito Elyono. You only need to start. You only need to do Sirtut, the Shito Elyono on the top line. And really, halachically speaking, the Shulchan Aruch is going to discuss over here as to whether you actually need the Sirtut, or it's just a really good reason. It's a good, really good idea to do it, or they're going to end up writing crooked. So, do you need to do Sirtut, or is it just a good idea to do Sirtut? That's really the discussion. Is there a halachic requirement to make that indentation? Or is it just a good idea? And that will be discussed in greater detail in the rest of Sivov. Over to you.
So in this week's parsha, Moshe says over Shabbos and the melechas on the Mishkan next to each other. In last week's parsha, it also says that. And we learn from there that the melechas and Shabbos are the melechas that were done in the Mishkan. If you look closely, in last week's parsha in Kisiso, the melechas on the Mishkan was first. And then it said Shabbos. But in this week's parsha, it says the Shabbos first, then the melachos in the Mishkan. Why did Moshe change the order? Also, when Moshe said to Bnei Yisrael in Vayakhel, he added one melacha. He added Lo Sivar Eish B'chol Mishvisichem. Why did Moshe specify that melacha? In Kisisa Vayakhel, the pasuk uses a similar term to describe melacha. In Kisisa, the pasuk says Sheshes Yomim Yiasem Melacha in masculine. And in Vayakhel, the Pasuk says, Sheshes Yomim Teos HaMelacha, in feminine. Unglish translates the Melacha of Yeos HaMelacha to masculine in Kisiso, as Yisavei Divida. But Unglish in Vayakhel keeps Melacha in its original state of feminine, and keeps it Tisavei Dividita. What are these two types of Melacha? That was Melacha, but when it talks about actual Shabbos itself, it says in Kisiso, feminine, and Vayakhel masculine. So in Kisiso, Moloch is masculine and Shabbos itself is feminine. And in Vayakhel, Moloch is feminine and Shabbos itself is masculine. What's the change? There are two parts of Shabbos. There's the completion of the week and the start of the week ahead, the new week. Friday night is the completion of the week. Shabbos day is the start of the new week. Friday night, the completion of the week, passively given its status by the completion of the melacha. It doesn't do anything, it only receives. That is the feminine aspect of Shabbos. Shabbos day gives bracha to the week ahead. And that is the masculine part of Shabbos. That's why on Friday night in Amidah, we say v'yanuchu bo, in feminine, because Friday night is feminine. And on Shabbos day, we say boy, because in this day, Shabbos is masculine. Friday night, the completion aspect of Shabbos is relevant to Hashem, and the bracha aspect, the aspect that gives bracha to the week ahead, is relevant to humans because we need bracha. So Shabbos being the end is relevant to Hashem, and being the beginning for the next week is for humans. A further example of this is the Gemara in Shabbos. The Gemara in Shabbos says that if you're lost in the desert, then and you don't know what day it is, you don't know when Shabbos is, there's a machlokus whether you celebrate Shabbos the first day you're there, or you wait 6 days, and on the seventh day we celebrate Shabbos. The reason behind the machlokus is because the man that almost says we celebrate it the first day is because we are humans, and humans were created on the sixth day, so Shabbos is its first day. So we celebrate Shabbos on the first day. Mandom, who says the seventh day, is because we are celebrating Shabbos because Hashem finished the Malacha. And Hashem worked for 6 days and completed the seventh day. So, in Kisiso, Hashem is speaking to Moshe. So Hashem first described the Malacha, and then he said Shabbos. Because for Hashem, the key aspect is the week, is the end, the completion of the past week. So, he first says Malacha, and then says Shabbos. But in Vayakhel, Moshe is speaking to Klal Yisrael, to man. So he describes Shabbos first, because the Ikka for man is the big start of the week ahead. So in Kisiso, the Ikka is Hashem. For Hashem, the Ikka is the week, the past week, the week before. So he describes Malacha as masculine because Shabbos is feminine because Shabbos receives its status by the Malacha. But in Vayakhel, when Moshe is speaking to Klal Yisrael, he describes Shabbos first because in Kisiso he described the Ikka is the week ahead. So Shabbos is giving bracha to the week ahead. So it's masculine. It's giving malach. It's giving something to the week ahead, and the malacha at the end of the week is receiving it. So in Vayakhel, when Moshe is speaking, the Ikka is man's perspective, and it's the beginning of the week ahead. So the pasuk uses specifies the first malacha that we do in the week. Shabbos is the first day. We don't do any malacha on that day. So the first malacha is Havdalah. When we do Havdalah, we light a candle. So the pasuk uses Moshe specifies the svaris b'chomash v'sechem. You shouldn't light a candle because that is the beginning of the week ahead. Yeah.